Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. I am Ethan Lane Miller, and joining me today are...
Barak Malkin.
RDY.
Woo! All right. So...
Woo, I'll throw it in.
Yeah, just, you know, I feel like I'm always wooing the guest, and then it's just us this time.
I'm sure you're going to woo us today.
I don't know about that. We'll find out. So I picked the topic today, and Barak knows this, and I think RDY saw a shade of this. I am leading with the nerd culture, which, as you probably know by the title of this episode, has something to do with Minority Report. But that wasn't my first tie-in. It's just a little behind the scenes. So we are filming. We're recording this in early April. And we are deep into the middle of Bad Batch Season 3. And there's a plot line that they've started to pick up. And I don't know where it's going to go. And last night, I watched the kind of mid-season two-part episode, which was incredible, deeply emotional. And decided I wanted to wait to talk about the Bad Batch, just to see where this plot line goes, as well as where the plot lines for all of this goes. So this is your teaser that we will definitely be doing the Bad Batch at some point.
But Susan, the Bad Batch is one of the Star Wars shows.
That's correct. So the Bad Batch is an animated Star Wars show currently on Disney Plus.
Not a sponsor.
Thank you. I paused just for that. And it is in some ways a successor to The Clone Wars, which was also an animated series. But anyway, Minority Report. I love this movie. It's, of course, based on The Minority Report. Would it be a short story by Philip K. Dick? Okay. Well, none of us have read it, but we've all seen the movie, which is very nice. My father, a constitutional law scholar, used to have an assignment on The Minority Report, the movie, and he would have students watch it and then write an essay about it, about if, you know, the legality of future crime or the pre-crime division, because the plot of the movie is that in the future, there are some humans born have the ability to kind of see visions of the future. And so they form a pre-crime division and they arrest people before crimes take place. And the plot is Tom Cruise's character is implicated by one of the precogs, or by all the precogs, in committing a crime, a murder of someone he has no idea who he is. And the plot is him trying to exonerate himself when they discover that there's a Minority Report, but
and
it's...
And he's head of the pre-crime division. That's...
Yeah, that's an important... Yeah, he is one of the heads of the... Yes. So it's a fantastic movie. I recommend you watch it. But the
A heads up, I have not seen this movie in a while now. So I'm going on memory, which is not great. We'll see how
it's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Same, but I'm a fan of the movie as well.
Yeah, ditto. Also a fan of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So really the plot point I'm really interested in exploring is how Tom Cruise's character, the very American John Anderton, receives a possible vision of his future and he fights it. He sees a destiny laid out before him and he says no. That's the plot point that I really want to explore.
Okay. It's interesting because like some of the details of the movie, like red balls and brown balls and what comes out of the machine that tells you if it's red, it's like imminent and this person is about to commit murder. And if it's brown, it's pre...
No, you're right. Like, I believe it was that like red was like a crime of passion. And
brown is premeditated.
Right. And that they didn't get very many of those anymore because pre-crime kind of shuts it down.
Right.
So I feel like we've had a free will versus determinism conversation before, but is that where we're headed? I don't have the Jewish connection, but.
I'm not so much about free will versus determinism. I'm really more exploring like characters who have a destiny in front of them and how they do or do not embrace that.
Oh my God, so many.
So we're talking about like a biblical character who's changed their fate?
I think we'll get there. My anchor is more of a specific biblical character or story who does not immediately embrace the path laid out in front of them.
Here's the problem with your inquiry is that this is the hero's journey. Like the storytelling phrase, the hero's journey, which starts off with the hero being told they have somewhere to go. And the first thing they do is say no. And so the majority of our biblical heroes have that initial instance where they are presented with a conflict or a problem that they should do. Their initial gut reaction is no. Moses, Jonah. Like there's a whole list of characters. That's two. So, there's a whole list.
So maybe I'm not refining it the right way. Like I'm really, I feel like there's a difference or there's a nuance between the hero's journey and being told like this is your destiny. Because I feel like hero's journey, there's almost like some agency in it. Like there's some choice. I'm choosing to embark upon this quest. Whereas destiny is more like this is your fate. You are being absolutely pushed into this.
Does this person consistently say no and they continually get pushed into it? Like they're reluctant the entire way?
No.
Okay. RDY, do you have a guess?
I feel like Moses and Jonah are the two strongest. Jonah probably more dramatically refuses his hero's call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote down Moses and Jonah.
And I think the other would be Esther, who has to be told by Mordecai, you've got to do this, because if you don't do this, we'll find a way to save ourselves, but your fate won't change.
Yeah, so those are kind of my anchors and my starting point. And I think it's really great to have Esther kind of thrown in there. I was drawn to Moses and thinking about Exodus chapter 4, where Moses like fights God. And with all due respect to Mordecai, I feel like there's a little bit of a gap between disagreeing with uncle and fighting with God, which is kind of more the direction I was taking when I was saying, like, I feel like that's hero's journey, Esther not agreeing with Mordecai. And then there's like destiny of Moses disagreeing with God. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to explore that a little bit today.
Yeah, Moses is interesting because he's like, why me? Because who am I? Which is why he's kind of the poster child for humility.
Do you see it as humility?
In Moses's case, it's hard not to, because that's kind of how it's been taught to me. I think Moses does have the right amount of humility because, as we say in Musar, he takes no more than his space, but no less than his place. Like he does step up eventually and take place as the leader of the Israelites.
So just to clarify, Ethan, what the smash here is, we're looking at heroes who reject their destiny.
Heroes who reject their destiny or otherwise eventually come around to it. What's interesting about Minority Report, why I liked it as an anchor, is that ultimately John Anderton does not kill that man, but that man still dies like seconds later. And so I think there are questions of like, is it also still destiny, even if it transpires slightly differently from...
I have the name Crow in my head. Is that the guy who...
Leo Crow.
Leo Crow. And I remember, now in the movie, the reason it's premeditated is because Anderton has like sworn to kill the person who killed his wife and son, or just son?
I believe just son and wife, and he split up.
Okay. And then he became addicted to some sort of futurist drug.
Yeah.
And Leo Crow ends up being a fake murderer for his son.
Yes.
So it's not just that he can change his destiny, but his destiny cannot be manipulated. Like he is destined really to not murder. But, you know, the whole concept of a Minority Report is when the twins think one thing and Agatha thinks something else.
Yeah, completely right. So there's an element of this where there's three precogs and there's sometimes a Minority Report where one of them disagrees with the other. And in this case, Agatha, one of the precogs, has a Minority Report against Anderton, which, spoiler alert, eventually leads to the big thing at the end of the movie where they get rid of the pre-crime division because they realize it's flawed. If there's a Minority Report, then we can kind of escape our destinies a little bit. So what's interesting is that, you know, the destiny takes place here.
I'm sorry, can we go back a quick sec?
Please.
Just because I think that point that they take down pre-crimes is a flaw in the logic.
Okay, go on.
because any tool is only as good as the person using it. And the pre-crime setup is a tool. And yes, they should probably treat the three progs more like humans than like tools, because they're just sitting in their saline solution all day, floating and hopefully getting fed. But when all three of them agree, then that's what happens, and that's what's gonna happen. But when there's a disagreement, that's when you should treat it differently. Like, go say, let's go find this Leo Crow person with the help of Anderton and say, okay, what's going on here that you would want to kill him? And we talk about this all the time for the last few years about the use of violence among police and how, you know, to a hammer, everything's a nail. So when you have police officers who are trained in such a way that everything is danger, because for them, a lot of the world is danger. When they go into a situation where a social worker would be a better choice handling a situation, they go in as police and sometimes make mistakes. And so the same thing, I think, was kind of the point they missed with Minority Report, where pre-crime could have had the opportunity. It's not just arrest them or let them go. There are other options on the spectrum.
You're suggesting like detain for 24 hours until the time period has passed?
Something, or at least create some
solution. Yeah.
Or at least create some kind of alternate system for these minority situations instead of just saying, well, one time it broke, so we should just throw the whole thing out. If they've and their rates, I remember them. I don't remember the percentages, but I remember them sharing at some point how crime has extremely diminished because either they were stopping crime or people were afraid to do crime knowing that they'd be caught ahead of time anyway. So crime had almost completely disappeared.
And murder
so,
specifically.
Murder, fine. So murder specifically. And so for them to go, oh, well, I guess people can just murder again. Like, as soon as murderers find out the precog division is gone, murder is back on the table. They shouldn't. I agree with you. That's a great flaw in this movie, is that they shouldn't have just said, no, let's throw it away. They should have looked at it and said, well, times they are a-changing. How are we going to change with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I don't know that this conversation is fully theoretical, and we're kind of already going there. So let's jump in a little bit. The great sage Wikipedia has pointed me to something called the criminal reduction utilizing statistical history, which is an IBM predictive analytic system that at least in 2010 was being trialed by two British police forces. And it's a predictive analytic system that attempts to predict the location of future crimes. So this has been a real idea since 2010, and it's all the rage right now. So I think I'm going to put it out there. Is AI going to start to help us to predict crime?
The way you've described this predictive tool sounds to me like a disaster waiting to happen, because you've got a location and nothing else, which means the typical cop is going to go into a location and they're going to see some person of color, and they're going to see that person of color acting, quote unquote, suspiciously, and disaster.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, AI is trained by humans, so there's the flaw right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's other areas of criminal investigation that they're trying to utilize computers and AI more, like identifying facial recognition and other pieces. And just similar to that, they have found that there is still computer error because of the human error input. And so I think some of these are going to be helpful, but just like Minority Report, you cannot trust everything to a singular system and just expect that it's going to automate itself perfectly. There has to be checks and balances throughout in order to make sure.
So let's kind of challenging our previous assumption then a little bit. Like, it seems like y'all were very okay with the idea of, you know, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater in the case Minority Report. Is it possible then?
The precogs are in bathwater.
Oh, nice. Do those points kind of work against each other, where it's like, well, hold on, this system might be flawed, but we trust the precogs because they are definitely not racially biased?
No, I think all of it needs to have oversight, right? The precogs had oversight. They just had different rules and regulations, and they should have analyzed those once they discovered a shift in the system and made those corrections. And that's sort of the problem with, we're getting to a very different episode than I thought we were. That's sort of the problem with the policing system, is that we know there are issues and problems, and there are no shifts and changes being made to radicalize the changes that RDY is talking about. And right. that's the issue today, is that there needs to be a shift and change drastically. But instead, they're saying either, no, it's not broken, we'll just correct this one now and otherwise we're fine. Or there's people on the other side entirely that says, let's get rid of all the precogs and not worry about, like, no policing system, which I don't think is the right answer either. I think there has to be some middle ground of checks and balances to help make sure that our society is safe in a vast definition of the word safe.
Yeah.
So pulling it back into the Jewish, I'm curious, Barak, if you agree or disagree with the delineation I tried to make between Esther and Mordechai and Moses and God, like if there's a difference between destiny or embarking on a hero's journey or quest.
That's a tough one. I would say technically they're both based out of destiny for me. And it comes in the line that the new WRJ podcast is titled after, where Mordechai says to Esther, maybe it's just for this moment that you're in this position of leadership, right? Her destiny has brought her to this role with the Spider-Man's, with great power comes great responsibility, destiny tied to it of you are here, you should do something. I view it as the same thing, except one of them is spoken through a burning bush and the other is spoken through an old Jewish man.
So do you think God was speaking through Mordechai?
Oh, that is a tough one. I have a complicated thought about God and free will and determinism. And so for me, part of me says that all of it is sort of based out of God in some way.
It notably in the Esther story in particular, the book of Esther is the one book of the Bible where God is not a character. And mm-hmm. God is not mentioned in the entire book of Esther, which makes people go, oh, yeah, God is hidden in the book of Esther. Well, of course, you know, if you believe in God and you believe God is everywhere, then yes, God is where God is not mentioned. So that's not a, you know, deep thought. But I think more important is the fact that God is not mentioned in the story, because humans have to step up. The book of Esther is probably the most recent book in the entire Bible as far as what was written latest in history. And part of the evidence of that is it's the one book of the Bible where we get the word Yehudit, which means Jewish. And that concept is a very late historical concept of people being able to be Jewish. So, you know, and I think the concept of God not being an active presence in the story is also a more modern concept than the early biblical stuff, where in Genesis, God is one of the only characters. And in Exodus through Deuteronomy, God is kind of pushing Moses along and doing things actively and talking with Moses and commanding Moses. But then later on, God starts to, like, you know, other people do things, and maybe God's spirit will affect a character here and there, or maybe a character will have a vision of God or God's words, but not like having conversations with God. And as you get later and later, the presence becomes less and less obvious.
I think I'm still struggling to, like, I want to keep pushing Barak a little bit. Actually,
Why me?
To, like, I want to try and pin you down a little bit on the, like, what is destiny? What is, like, because I guess I'm still in this camp that, like, Esther was not destiny. That was a choice. That was a journey that she chose to do. Yeah. And still feeling like Moses was destiny.
What is destiny if not the choices we make?
Here's why it's complicated for me. And I don't know if I've talked about this on Torah Smash yet, because I know I've done it in, like, my 5-year-old's Jewish family journey class with those parents. But God to me is sort of like Ted Danson from The Good Place, where he, you know, let me move this mess. Yeah, I forgot you can't see in 12 dimensions, right? we're not supposed to understand God as an entity. We can't possibly understand God. And so for me to say, no, my reasoning says this in this situation, so therefore my other logic must be flawed, I don't think I can understand all of the concepts. To me, God is this 12th dimension dungeon master managing all of these different storylines in the world at the exact same time. I believe there's some greater power, right? But when I'm driving down the highway, stuck in traffic with hundreds of other people going the same direction and hundreds going the other way, and my brain goes, wow, how do all of their stories overlap? There's no way I can imagine that. But I believe that there is some entity like God who can understand and imagine that for that moment in time prior to and afterwards. And so when you're saying to me, what's the difference here? I'm telling you, I don't know, and that's fine. But to me, it's still God.
Okay. Was it always destiny that Moses would not make it into Israel?
Yes, because that's what the book says.
Wait, does it say that he didn't know this when he was about to strike? I figure like an 80s sitcom narration, like he didn't know this at the moment, but when he struck that rock, he was never going to make it into the land of Israel.
Struck the rock twice.
Yeah.
The thing that, you know, in the Matrix, when the Oracle says, what'll really get your goat is, would you have still done it if I hadn't warned you?
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of, that's always, I like that as far as like destiny, fate. But I feel like God's role in our destiny is more of a, you know, that with the combination of destiny and free will, I think there are things that we can choose and things that happen in their time. And, you know, the example that you gave at the beginning, Ethan, of Leo Crow dying anyway, that was, so his destiny was to die that day, but Anderton's destiny was not to be the murderer.
Yeah. Maybe me asking, does Moses make it into Israel? It wasn't the right question. Maybe it was, if Moses had said no, would the Israelites still have made it out of Egypt? Was that always the destiny?
Well, Moses tried to say no and God yelled at him.
Yeah, but like, what if he was like, no, like, does God go, all right, Aaron, you're up.
You know, I'd love to see a movie that does this twice or three times even, where the main character. No, Clue just does the ending seven times. I'm talking about the whole, there's other movies where a character discovers its destiny and they fully reject it. Or they fully accept it and try to change it. And both times they are forced. I want to watch both of those things happen, right? If these things are going to happen either way, show me how the one goes, well, if that says it's going to happen, I'm just going to sit at home on my couch and watch TV. And let's see destiny find me now and see what happens to force them out of that situation. And we also get to see what happens if they say, no, that's not my destiny. I'm going to forcibly change it and go to that location and show you that I would never kill this person. Like, what happens if he got fired in this movie and he just goes, oh, fired. There goes my career. And he just goes home and drinks in his sorrows. Like, what would have happened in this movie? Would he still have ended up
just submits to getting arrested? Oh, the precogs say I'm going to do it. I guess I am.
Yeah. Right. And totally submits and goes to future prison. Would this still have happened? I would love to see how destiny shows us that it would always happen. I would love to see that.
Well, there's also the two movies I'm thinking of in tandem with what you're saying are Sliding Doors, where she misses the train.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the difference? In the end, she still ends up with the same guy and ends up with her boyfriend.
True.
And then Groundhog Day, where we see 180 versions.
Oh, I like the Sliding Doors example. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And the Groundhog Day is interesting, but he doesn't find a there's one resolve, right? Essentially.
Right, but there are a bunch of different ways that it could happen, but he finds the right way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The one destiny that he needs to do in order to get there, where Sliding Doors has that's exactly what I'm talking about, of like forcing the separate situations, what happens and how do we still find the same exact thing?
I had a question and I lost it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you look at it?
Oh, I'm going to add another level to this.
Please.
Is that, let me see if I can explain this a little better with my idea of a God entity. Is I imagine that God has a sliding door scenario for each of us, but there's like multiple sliding door scenarios for each of us and still overlaps and connects in different ways. So I don't know if that makes more sense to people than the second traffic situation, but the fact that there's multiple possibilities and canon events for each of us, right? And yet somehow this has been somewhat laid out, and we still have the choices that we can make in those scenarios that lead us to the, right? The sliding doors, the canon events didn't change, but the decisions changed.
I think I can take that and summarize it.
Sure.
My personal belief is that we have free will, but there are certain choices that are placed before us intentionally.
I would also say like certain choices that are placed before us repeatedly.
Life is a big learning experience.
Mm. Yeah. And like life is, what is it that we're personally struggling with? You know, for me, a big one is patience. And it's something, you know, I am in the, in theory, second half of my life. And that to me means I should be getting better, but always something crops up, usually at a board meeting, but always something happens that kind of tries my patience, and I might get angry and I might snap at people. And my family has gotten very good at kind of using code words to call me out in a way that allows me to calm down. But people I work with, you know, haven't had that kind of constant experience with me that they can do that. So that's a constant challenge. And I think those choices that I make, do I have the ability to take a breath and, I'm quoting Musar again, and move the match away from the wick, you know, so that I don't light that fuse? Is that something that I can remember in the moment? And when I was much younger, my successes were fewer and farther between. But, you know, we always have slips.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is speaking for me personally. I recognize those patterns in my life. Those moments where I'm making a similar decision or I'm in a similar scenario, and how am I going to respond to that?
Yeah. And I mean, experience is a great teacher if we learn from it.
Yeah, that was my first. I was like, well, we have to be open-minded to it.
Yeah. I think as far as like God involves God's self with our destiny, I don't know that I see that God always wanted me to do what I'm doing, but I think the choices were laid out in front of me. Let me say it another way. I see it more like a parent and their children, where like I have hopes and dreams that my children will go to school, be successful, find a partner to share their life with. And I have done my best with my wife as partner to guide our children in such a way that they make the choices that lead them to college and career and whatever. And so far we've got one in college. So that's one choice made well. You know, my mother's husband is about to become a grandfather again.
You said your mother's husband?
My mother's husband is not my father.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking wife's husband. Oh, I was like, that's you. That's not it. My child's mother's husband.
No, my mother's husband's son and his wife are about to have a baby. And they have already chosen not to raise that child Jewish. And the choice that they have made makes my mother's husband disappointed. But he knows that it doesn't like cut him out of that child's life. He actually listens to the show. So hello. And I hope it's okay that we're telling the story. And it has been a trial for him that I think he is going through passing with flying colors, so to speak, that the decisions that my mom's husband has made about the relationship he wants with his granddaughter far outweigh the choices that anyone else has made about raising that child. And I think that's closer to the movie, where Anderson's choice to be mature.
Anderton.
Thank you.
Anderson is Matrix.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Anderton. I've mixed my movies. So I think it's a stronger parallel to Minority Report, where Anderton chooses not to pull the trigger, even though other people had a pull on what could have been his destiny. But instead, he chose the mature route. He was thoughtful. He was the detective that he was trained to be. And he made the choice to not murder. And I think my mother's husband is making a similar choice in this story, where he's choosing to be a loving grandparent no matter what, which is the right choice, in my humble opinion.
Thank you for sharing that.
Happy to share my own and other people's stories.
So is there a minority report for Moses where he agrees straight out and makes it then into the land of Israel?
No. I don't think so. Because if he does, then the Israelites have the leader that they don't need at that moment. You know, like the same reason we have term limits for presidents, and I wish we had them for other political leaders. But, you know, Moses's leadership was for teaching and guiding and getting the generation to change over and become a new people. Joshua's leadership, who was the one who took over after Moses, was necessary because Joshua was a military leader and his experience was needed for that next step into the promised land for the battle of the land of Canaan. Interestingly enough, stay tuned for our two episodes from now when we start that same journey in our second anniversary one shot.
Ooh, plug. This is great. I still didn't remember what my other question was, but that's fine. So I'm nearing the end of what I had written down. Is there anything we haven't touched on that y'all want to touch on?
I don't remember enough of the movie for me to nitpick it like we did with Star Trek First Contact. I'm sure there are things.
Lovingly critique is how I would describe what we did with First Contact.
So I wish I remembered more of it. I remember a lot of the technology at the time. We're going, well, that's cool. So futuristic. And we have some of those today now, which is very fun.
And scary.
Yeah.
I mean, we have targeted advertisements now.
Yeah, so futuristic, but they still use a marble.
Yeah, that's something that's always like bothered me about the movie, but I choose to see it as like that's an artistic choice.
There's got to be some pattern because Inside Out uses marbles for memories also. What other movies use marbles for memories?
Well, I've lost my marbles is a phrase.
That's good.
Right, Men in Black has a whole galaxy in a marble.
I was just about to say, yeah.
It's not a memory, though.
It's a galaxy. Yeah.
Are there other, hey, listeners, are there other movies that use marbles for memories? Let us know.
Did you hear me say Peter Pan?
No. Where in Peter Pan?
In Hook, I think it is. One of the older men who lives with.
Oh, Wendy. Yes.
It's going on about how he's lost his marbles.
I've lost my marbles.
And Peter finds them in Neverland and gives them
Yes, they're not, they don't have memories in each of them, but they're tied to his, right? They're implied that they are his memories, but I think they were also being playful writers of like, hey, there's this double entendre here. Let's have him say he's lost his marbles, which everybody else thinks is he's gone insane, even though he's saying it to himself. But really, he's just lost his bag of marbles in the land of Neverland.
Right.
But that's a nice plug. I like that one. Can't think of any others.
No, I can't think of any except for Inside Out and hopefully the new one,
which I'm so excited to see.
Yeah, it looks good.
Cool. All right, that's my episode. I realized I didn't have an exit strategy. That's cool.
It's not always the choices we make, but the choices that make us.
It's very good.
What is that from?
I made it up.
All right, so I think what I'll leave with is kind of where I started, which was actually with the Bad Batch. I'll be very curious to see what destiny these characters walk. I think some are fated to, I guess I will say, have their stories conclude at the end of this series. And I think others potentially have some very interesting choices ahead of them. And one in particular, who at least in one of the episodes we saw, was presented a path we've seen many heroes walk and said, no. And so I'm very curious to see where this all ends up.
I like how this wasn't a Star Wars episode for Ethan, but he's like, let me open with Star Wars and let me close with Star Wars and give you something else in the middle.
But it's not Star Wars.
But I promise you, this is not a Star Wars episode.
What I thought of as your closing was Oedipus Rex.
So that's so funny to bring that up. I wrote that down as an example and I didn't end up pulling it because we did really well, but that is literally one of the examples I wrote down in my show notes.
Yeah.
For Susan, can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, Oedipus Rex is a Greek tragedy where Oedipus the prince is told by a blind seer that he's going to murder his father and marry his mother. Mm-hmm. And so in order to avoid that, or maybe it's the king is told that someone's going to murder him, that his son is going to murder him and marry his wife. I think it's the latter. And so the king has Oedipus raised away from the palace and makes it so that he never has any contact with the royal family. And Oedipus is one day walking on the road, and the king is riding on the road, and the king says, move out of the way. And he's like, who the hell are you? And they get into a fight, and he kills the king. Oops, his dad. And then makes it somehow to the palace and falls in love with the queen. Oops, his mother.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then when he realizes what he's done, he stabs his eyes out.
Yeah. So I have another Star Wars example that's maybe even better and a slightly deeper cut. So I've definitely mentioned Timothy Zahn and the original Thrawn trilogy many, many times. And one of the characters that is introduced there is Mara Jade, who is an assassin of Emperor Palpatine. And the last command that he gave her through the Force as the Death Star is exploding is, you will kill Luke Skywalker. And so she ends up meeting Luke Skywalker and literally hears the Emperor's voice like thundering in her head, you will kill Luke Skywalker. And so over the course of these three books, she's like, hey man, I am going to kill you. This is my destiny. I'm going to kill you. And in the big climax, we discover that someone cloned Luke Skywalker, and the clone is seduced by the dark side, and she kills Luke Skywalker.
The clone.
Yeah, it's such good writing. It's great.
That's
great. All right. This was my non-Star Wars episode about the fate of destiny.
Well done.
Thank you. That'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Fogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps others find us and is an excellent way to support the podcast. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, purchase swag from our store, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And what do Jewish mothers believe when it comes to free will versus determinism? It doesn't matter. They'll sit in the dark no matter what you do. Hold on, I can say something smart before I do the outro.
Yeah, we can pause. We got some time.